You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Long-form conversations podcast from New York City. I'm Molly Thomas. I was the guest in the last episode, but today I'm the host, baby. And my guest today
is baby in there.
Oh yeah, baby's all over this thing. My guest today, you just heard from, is Jonathan Braylock, who improv fans might know from Astronomy Club and the podcast Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, what's up?
Welcome.
Thank you.
Just a half hour ago, I was sitting on the other side of this table, and now I feel very official. Cool. So why don't we start off, tell us, so you went to NYU for college. And so how did you get to... You studied performance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Tisch. Oh, I just knocked the mic.
Yes. He was gesturing.
This is always a problem with me on podcasts. I like to use my hands a lot, but it's not conducive to
it's
that.
It's not good. So walk us through your college to how you got to be here.
Yeah.
All of your backstory.
Yeah, I'm... So in West Philadelphia, born and raised. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just kidding. I went to NYU for acting. I studied at Stella Adler, and you know, my first experience with improv was there. I mean, I had only known improv in the sense of like, whose line is it anyway? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people maybe have that same kind of thing. And so when we did improv as a part of like this conservatory acting program, it was less focused on comedy, but like I thought improv was all about comedy because of that. And we weren't doing short form. We probably were doing like some sort of long form, even though I didn't know the distinctions between that. Anyway, I got into comedy. I remember people at like NYU, because Hammercats was big at NYU.
Oh yeah, the sketch team.
The sketch team, and then Danger Box, I believe, was like the improv team. And there were a lot of people who went to NYU and like performed at UCB. I think I like just missed Donald Glover. He might have been a senior when I was a freshman. I do remember seeing Derek Comedy perform live there when I was a freshman. And being like, oh my God, this is really cool. So like, I had heard of UCB, but I never really went to check it out.
Sure.
It wasn't until basically almost my senior year, or I would say the summer before my senior year, I started going to UCB. And that was primarily because of this sketch group, Britannic, which is Brian McElhaney and Nick Kocher, who both write for SNL right now, actually. And they had a sketch group that performed at UCB. Like, they had, like, a running show there. And I think that's when I started going to UCB. And then I went to Del Close that year.
Oh.
And when I went to Del Close, I, like, that's when I fell in love with improv. Because me and my friend Rami, who I did sketch comedy with, we went to, like, all these different shows. And we saw Derek Comedy perform. We saw... You know, we saw Death by Ruru. We saw, you know, like Mandzukas and all those guys, like Shira. I don't remember like exactly which shows or whatever. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Rebecca Drysdale before I knew who she was and just being like, oh my God, this woman's amazing. Like, I thought she was the best improviser I'd ever seen. And then I also saw improvise Shakespeare, and that also, because I studied Shakespeare for a year at NYU, and that blew me away too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's kind of when I started going. So I graduated a semester early. Like, I finished my, you know, the fall semester. And so
Congratulations to your parents, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Saving that part
of the
tuition.
Loans. So many loans. And literally the beginning of the next year, I signed up for 101 and 201, like, back to back. Like, they were both intensives. And in my mind, I was like, I'm a performer. I, like, took some improv. Like, I don't need 101 and 201. Like, let me blow through this as quickly as I possibly can.
Yes. When did you realize, oops, nope?
It's definitely 201. Like, 101, I was like, 101 was cool. It was, like, fun. I was like, oh, like, this isn't easy, but I felt capable because a lot of people in that class weren't performers in the slightest, you know? Like, there were people who just were, some people who were just trying it out just to do it, not necessarily like improv nerds and like kind of, so some people were, but not everyone. So like 101, I felt very confident and I was like, I was 100% right to do this back-to-back thing. But then like when 201 started, I was like, oh my God, this is so much harder than I thought it was going to be. And that's when I was like, okay, let me chill out for a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hence why 301 is not offered as an intensive.
Yeah.
Slow it down. Because I have a theater background, mm-hmm. but an acting background like you. But I was on a short form improv team in college freshman and sophomore year. And so when I went in to take 101, I did the intensive as well. And I was like, well, I mean, I've got this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No problem. And then I did expert panel.
Uh-huh.
So where three people are sitting on stage or four people. I mean, you know it.
Yes,
as I explained,
yes, yes,
but maybe the audience doesn't know it.
For the students.
Yeah. And so the teacher acts as a host, and then you all are... you're all guests on this talk show, right?
Yeah.
And so we all were firefighters. And then your baby went to crazy town. So I was, she was like, what happened? I don't know. I was like, we all have a calendar that we do and also something. I went to crazy town.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, nope, I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
I'm not good at this yet.
Yeah.
I really need to back off.
Yeah.
Cool.
But
so,
yeah, that's how I got started. I took the class, I also read Truth in Comedy.
Oh, okay.
Either before, I don't know if it was before or after. I feel like it was before, though, because I remember reading it and being like, I think I understand this. And then also, the Pit had these improv jams, because that's where we were performing sketch.
Mm.
And they had these improv jams, like, late at night, like, called Improdome. And me and Rami and my friend Kyle, too, would, like, always go to that. And
then those were for three prov teams, right?
Or exactly.
Three people, yeah, yeah.
They
I
were,
did
like,
Improdome.
For teams, yeah. And so the three of us or the two of us would perform there. And, like, we met people there. That's where I met Lucas Hazlitt, who's, like, doing great now and stuff. But, yeah, so that was fun. I was really cocky, and then 201, I think I was humbled because I was like, oh my God, it's so much thinking.
Yeah, 201 is a real, it's really putting you through the ringer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then, how long did you take classes? And then when did you get on Lloyd Knight? When were you placed?
Yeah, so that was the beginning of 2010 that I started, And then I I did the diversity scholarship, but I would only get, like, one credit at a time. So then the spaces between classes were a lot longer. But I took 301. It took me twice to pass 401. And I did an ASH with Betsy Stover. And I think right around that point is when, like, Astronomy Club started practicing together to audition for Harold. And that was the end of 2013, but, like, mm-hmm. we didn't get placed on the team until 2014.
Yeah, yeah, so the auditions work a little bit differently every year.
Yeah.
And so at that time, right, you could assemble a team of people. Well, you could either audition as a team of eight that already played together or assemble a team and audition together.
Yeah. I think it was only, like, the second time maybe that was happening, or I'm not sure. I never tried, even though I passed 401 probably like early 2013, if not the end of 2012. But I didn't. I never auditioned for Harold or Lloyd then. I think because I think I was like, I don't know how it is now, but I think there was a time where all you had to do was pass 401 and then you were eligible to audition.
Yeah, I think that's still true.
Okay.
And it has to have been a certain amount of time.
Yeah, now
since
yeah, it has
class.
To be a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
I think that time restriction wasn't there quite yet. And all I remembered was hearing about people like waiting like in these super long lines. And I was like, I'm just not about that.
So you didn't audition just because you're like, it's a hassle.
Yeah. And I was like, we were doing well with sketch and you know, we had gotten representation from that and
oh,
we
wow.
were doing college shows. And like, so I love doing improv, but I was like, I don't need to be on a house team. And then Rami booked a Nickelodeon show and moved to LA. And then I was like, I got to figure out what I'm doing. So I was on a Pitt House sketch team for a bit. And then after that wasn't really working, that's what I was like. And I started getting plugged back with improv after he had left too, and doing like more indie teams and stuff like that. And then right around the time I was leaving the Pitt House sketch team is when Astronomy Club started practicing together. And I also was working on my one-man show. I just, like, luckily, both of those things happened at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I found out that I was getting, that I got the run of my one-man show, like, days before I found out that I got onto Lloyd with Astronomy Club.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That was a nice month.
Yeah. It was
nice
like,
week.
Whoa. I was, like, all of a sudden, like, completely injected into the UCB
right.
system. Yeah.
And here's how I'm spending all of my nights
yeah.
from now on. Can you talk a little bit about Astronomy Club? Forming, and you guys have been together working on various projects, doing improv, sketch shows, mm-hmm. and all this stuff for now, what, like 4 years?
Well, I guess.
It oh, is wait, 2017.
It is, you're right. It is closing in on 4 years. Holy crap. It doesn't
yeah.
feel like it. Yeah, that's true. Wow. So, I mean, I know, like, a couple of them have done this already, but just like, a brief basically, James III and Keisha, I believe, like, had the idea to, like, audition as an all-black team. Like, they wanted to have, like, an all-black team audition to be on Harold or Lloyd together. And they started piecing people together. There was a group called Nobody's Token that a lot of us, like, had improv'd with. I was actually, like, somewhat new, though I knew them because we had done shows together at the Pit and stuff like that. And, like, I knew Keisha from the diversity program and, like, and Nobody's Token and all these things. So I had started improvising with them earlier that year. And actually, the funny thing was when they started improvising with Astronomy Club, I just thought it was Nobody's Token. And it wasn't until, like, maybe the third rehearsal that I was like, wait, we're auditioning for Lloyd, and everyone's like, that's the point of this whole thing. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. I was like, cool. Like, it still wasn't on my radar. So
you're like, are you guys going to stand in that line for me? Because I'm
yeah,
not about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, then they were like talking about it. They were like, yeah, you get like a time slot. And I was like, oh, that's so much better. Oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't know about the hard days
so
where you gotta like wait in a line.
But that was still just to sign up, right? You still got a time slot.
Is that right?
Oh, John.
I have no
you
idea.
You could have been on a team.
I heard, listen, I heard people were telling me like about lines outside the door, and literally I heard that and I was like, there's no way I'm doing it.
Yeah, I think that was just to sign up for an audition.
Yeah. Well, just for anyone who thinks I'm like being really arrogant right now, I am. That's my whole thing.
that's your character.
That is my comedic game and real life struggle.
So Astronomy Club, did you guys all get on Lloyd then, or was it another?
No, yeah, it was then. It was, I mean, I think we rehearsed like maybe 4 months before the auditions, and we started doing shows together as well. So we were set on like being a team, not just being like a group that's going to audition together, but
right.
like being a team and showing them like, we're all great improvisers, but we also are even better as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And we auditioned together and we got put on the team together. It was really cool.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And then how long were you guys a team for? 6 months?
No, this was when it switched so that it was just every year now.
Oh, you had
a year. So, okay. And I think it was the first time that happened, so we didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
So when the 6 month mark was approaching, everyone was getting nervous, and then we didn't hear anything, and then it wasn't until maybe 7 or 8 months that everyone heard everyone's going to be on a team for a year. The next auditions will be this date, and we were like, oh, okay, nice. We're here for a year. That's great.
Let's actually talk about that for a second. That feeling of, so at UCB here, you get placed on a team, so you most of the time don't have a say of what team you're on. That was an exception where you guys put yourselves together as a team and all got placed on, right? And then you don't know when your time is up. You don't know when your time is up as a performer or as a team.
Right.
So let's say that moment where it's like it hit the 6 month mark, mm-hmm. and we didn't know. Do you think that you played differently as a team? And I guess we could talk about, you were also on Lisa from School, and I coached you guys for a while. Do you think, I don't know, the energy of a team when you're not sure what's going to happen? What do you think happens there? Or what's your experience of what happened?
It's hard. I mean, I would say for the most part, and I'm not saying this just because it's the right thing to say, but for the most part, my personal mentality playing improv was always to try to be as supportive and like as team oriented as I possibly could be. For me, that's one of the fun things about improv is that you get to be supportive. You get to make your teammates funny. I mean, that sounds weird, but you get to set them up to be funny. And then in turn, they're setting you up to be funny. I keep hitting this table. Cause I do stand up as well. So I never really went out there with the mentality of I'm going to own this night, I guess, because somebody's in the crowd watching.
Right.
But what I did do though, I will say, is went to other, watch other people. I would go to and see the other teams and kind of try to compare and be do I think I'm doing better than this? Or who's doing really well? Who do I feel is, where do I rank amongst all the other players on the other teams? And I think I definitely watched a lot more. And it's funny because that's kind of a supportive thing, but I feel a lot of people, sometimes they get on a house team and they stop watching shows.
Sure.
But I kept watching shows, if not more so, because I really wanted to see how everybody else was doing.
I was going to say, supportive to go to other shows, not necessarily supportive to be I've ranked myself amongst you all as I watched you.
Yeah, yeah. Only internally, of course.
Oh, well, yeah. You didn't have your whiteboard out with your markers. Although that, I would like to see somebody do that, scorecard.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello, I'm Madeline Walter.
I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
We're the hosts of Definitely Dying, the podcast that's a safe space for listeners and funny friends to talk openly about their medical dramas, both real and imagined.
We're part of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, with new episodes released every Tuesday.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you love to get your podcasts.
Stay healthy.
Yeah, I always felt especially on Lloyd, if the artistic director was there, I knew it. And I didn't want to know it, but I couldn't not have that in my head.
Right.
And then
I would probably beat myself up more if I felt like I didn't have a good show and the artistic director was there. I think I'd be like, man, I could have done this. I could have done that.
Right.
But I definitely went out with the mentality of I want us to have a really great show.
Right.
But then, and maybe this was naive, but then I really felt hey, if we all do great, then this whole team will move up, you know? I think that's what really, that was our goal kind of that whole time was we were all I think Astronomy Club is a great thing and maybe us as a team. Because I think a year previously, I forgot what team
Graceland
it was.
Graceland was moved up, right?
Was it Graceland? Okay.
Or Apollo? Was Apollo?
I think it was Apollo. Okay. It was Apollo, yeah.
So that's interesting because you guys then, after a year, were put onto all different teams,
yeah.
right? But you're still together shows.
Totally.
So that's interesting. So maybe tell us, or tell me, mm-hmm. us, I represent
everyone who's
all
listening.
All of our listeners. So maybe talk about, yeah, that choice to stay together.
Yeah.
And also I'm going to loop in, like, sketch versus improv,
right.
all the different things you guys do.
Yeah. I mean, we were lucky enough, I think, like, Jara and maybe Ray and James, I forgot who it was exactly, but some of them had the idea to do a Black History show for February. Mm-hmm. This was, like, closing in on the time of shakeups, but before the shakeups. And they had emailed and asked the artistic director if they could do, and she gave us the slot, and we all wrote sketches, and we put on this, like, hour-long sketch show for Black History Month in, like, 2015. And it went really well. It was great. Like, the crowd was awesome. Everybody really loved it. And the artistic director asked us if we wanted to bring it back for a spank and, like, spank it so that we can have a run. The only thing is we would have to shorten it to 30 minutes. So, like,
right.
That had to happen. But basically that process was happening, then we all got, like, split up. But we had a reason to stay together. So we did. And because I think we all really loved that show and wanted to put it on again. And then, like, every now and then, like, we would do, like, someone would ask, like, Astronomy Club to do an improv show. And we also were hosting the Diversity Jam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there were a couple, like, so the Diversity Jam, the sketch show that we were spanking and eventually got a run at, were really the things that kept us together, I think, for the most part. And then, like, because we were seeing each other every time we got to do the Diversity Jam and we got to improv together. And I think every once in a while we would do, like, somebody's indie show as well. And we decided to, after the end of the run in New York, we were like, well, we should do this in L.A. It's a good excuse for all of us to go out there. Some people didn't have rep. We also just, like, everybody was into, like, going to L.A. for whatever reason. And so we emailed the artistic director in L.A. and we were like, hey, can we come out there and do this show? But there are also, because usually I did that with my one-man show, but you kind of only get one slot. We, like, luckily got two slots to do the show because we were like, we're kind of guilt-tripped. Like, we're like, are there eight of us? And we're like, you know, and we really think, like, people like the show. So we luckily were able to get two slots of the sketch show and an improv show that we were thinking about pitching that we now do called Let's Talk About Race, Baby. And that's when the first time we ever did that show was out in L.A. And that's,
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where we get, like, people from the audience to come up and kind of describe, like, an experience that happened to them that had to deal with race. And we do improv based off of that. Yeah.
And has that ever been uncomfortable or scary or?
Yeah, I think we were all, like, nervous when we were thinking the idea, but we were like, let's just do it. And thankfully it's never been too crazy. We've had some stories that were awkward, but we, like, kind of set the tone in up top and we're like, this is a safe space. We're not here to judge people. Like, we're not here to be like, oh, how dare, you know, we're not here to validate somebody's story or invalidate somebody's story. Like, these mm-hmm. are people's experience. And the whole point of this is for you to, like, openly and honestly share an experience that you had from your perspective, and then we'll do the job of interpreting it and putting it through this other, like, this comedic lens to maybe either shine a light on some issues or to make light of some issues that are serious or just to have fun and kind of demystify race conversations. Because especially at that time, I mean, still now, obviously, but this was, like, the fever pitch of, like, Black Lives Matter, I think, was, like, pretty high when we first thought of the idea. So we were like, this is our kind of part in helping with that.
Yeah, I think I often feel like in the improv community, because you have this group of people mm-hmm. that are drawn to improv, right? And so very loosely, unscientifically speaking, it's people who like to work together. They like to collaborate. Mm-hmm. They like to do funny things, and they're playful, but maybe not necessarily always the easiest group to talk about serious stuff with.
Right, right.
In my experience,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes.
So, yeah, right? When stuff gets heavy, mm-hmm. often it's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pat yeah, on yeah, the yeah. shoulder. I think that's really interesting that you guys are mixing, you know, you're acknowledging, like, we're going to work on this thing
totally.
That's difficult to talk about
yeah.
and demystify a little bit and might make light of it. This
yeah.
is me saying, that's a cool idea,
yeah,
and I
thank
like you guys
yeah.
are doing that.
It's one of the strengths and the privileges of Astronomy Club. Like, we, because we are a team with people, I mean, we all have diverse backgrounds. We're not all, like,
right.
a monolith, but we all are people of color, and we knew that going in, like, oh, well, we have the ability to talk about, or at least to, you know, even make fun of things that other people won't and probably shouldn't do, you know, because
right.
they
right.
don't have the same life experiences. And so we can go up there and talk about things that are, like, pretty serious and maybe awkward to talk about. Traditionally, but for us, we were like definitely interested in like breaking that kind of ceiling, and I think, I mean, that's the spirit of UCB, right? Like, is to be able to like break boundaries and like push the limits and kind of do things that otherwise other mediums can't really do because it has to be structured and all this stuff where it's improv because it's coming from yourself and your mind and like. It's just this amalgamation of knowledge and experience that you have, and then you kind of interpret that through your body, and then, like, you know, you hear the word, I don't know, Sasquatch. I had thought of four fruits before I said Sasquatch, by the way. Why is that?
That's a little, and again, was pineapple one
yeah,
of them?
Pineapple was one of them.
Yeah. Wait, like, I'm gonna guess your fruits. And the reason we're laughing about this, again, for our viewers
yeah,
out there,
insane.
Our viewers, our listeners, it's like a joke, at least here at UCB, that people will give the suggestion pineapple, thinking that they're very original and funny. I think that's maybe even in the book too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we've all decided that pineapple is the funniest fruit as a culture,
yeah.
and we think we're hilarious by suggesting that. So. Don't suggest that at shows and in your classes. Actually, let's use that to segue.
Yeah.
What's your favorite opening
oh,
and
man.
Why?
I mean, it's hard. I was never, like, a connoisseur of openings. Also, I was on Lloyd for 2 straight years, and we did the pattern game
the
for
whole time.
The entire time. So we never got to do another opening. But I remember liking Organic. Like when I did it in practice and watching it, and I think,
and you guys do, you have a monologue for Astronomy Club.
For Astronomy
right?
Club, there was a point in which, like in a lot of indie shows, we would do a living room opening, which is basically just like pattern game light. I feel like it's just people like standing around in that same semicircle, but instead of thinking about A to C, instead of A to C-ing words, we A to C stories.
Right. It's like a mix between monologues and pattern
yeah,
game.
Yeah. That was cool, but there's something about the organic that, or sorry, and maybe I'm not saying this right either, because I actually more mean sound and movement. But
oh, yeah.
When I was, for some reason, when I was coming up, the organic and sound and movement became like synonymous, and then I realized that they weren't.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually mean sound and movement.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right. We'll edit that out. In cool.
Yeah.
Is there then an opening that you wish you could have spent more time with, or would like? Which sounds fun.
I always thought scene painting was the most interesting for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
There's some and so I yeah there like I had a desire to do that as well, and I think. There's just something about, like, being in the audience and then, and, like, literally this, a team is starting to like manifest something that your own imagination is filling in as they're
right.
speaking and talking about things.
Right.
And I think that gets, for me as an audience member, I would get really excited. I'd be like, oh, this is cool. As a lot of openings, I was, especially when I was a student, I'd be like,
oh, yeah.
What is happening?
What is this?
Like, I don't understand anything. Also, do they expect me to remember this, like, from before? Like, I'm not going to be impressed because I am not remembering any of the things you guys are saying.
It's really funny. It's really funny teaching when people will come in and they'll start talking about a show and it's clear that they have no idea what the opening is.
Right.
And it's always like they look confused and kind of irritated, like yeah. they just were. And it's like, I don't know. They started, like, talking to a toaster,
yeah.
and then they, like, talked to the toaster higher, and
yeah.
then it was, like, they yelled. I don't know. And they're, like, it's so funny because I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, people start, everybody hates it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever, not just Invocation, whatever the opening,
yeah.
they're just kind of, like, confused, and then the scenes start, and then you have something to grab onto.
Right, right.
Funny. What's a moment in a class or with a team? What was an aha moment that you had? Or a moment of success?
I had one of the strongest aha moments I had is with a coach that I honestly am blanking on his name. I can see what he looks like in my head, and it also wasn't a UCB coach, so I don't know if this is taboo. But
I don't think it's taboo.
But there was a practice that we did that I felt was really useful. It was that I actually do a lot when I coach. Completely stole it because that's what coaching is all about.
Yeah, stealing the best stuff and then pitching it like you just thought of it.
Yeah. But he basically, it was this exercise where one person is a trainer and the other person is the trainee. And the trainer basically takes the trainee to three different stations at whatever the job is. And they explain, like, what the trainee has to do at each station. And, like, and then the trainee has to think of something that they're super passionate about and try to interject that into the entire, like, training.
Oh, so you think of it within the first instructional thing.
Yeah, so, like, or even before you step out. And so you step out with something that you're passionate about, and, like, the trainers say if they're just working at, like, Staples, and they're like, this is the printing area. If somebody needs to, like, print, you know, they have to, like, touch this menu. It's, like, a touch button, blah, blah, blah. And the person, if they were, like, really
Where
interested
Where do I keep my Windex?
Yeah. It's like, what? I'm sorry?
I'm very interested in personal cleanliness. So
oh.
if people are touching this screen, then I'd like to come over and clean it after each person uses it.
Okay, I don't know if we have Windex here, but you could certainly bring your own if that's something that you need to do to make you feel comfortable.
Oh, yeah, I have this travel bottle in my purse.
Oh,
so
wow.
If I could just...
Okay, really into Windex.
My game is super into Windex.
And it was like, it's such a simple thing and like a lot of structure, but
right.
it made me realize it. I think for me, like, that's when game like clicked the most clearly, because I was like, oh, like, you know, it's just a weird thing.
It's like, just one thing.
It's one weird thing. And we in a setting that we're all familiar with, and like a person is like being like saying something that's, it's not crazy town.
Right.
But it's weird enough that it's funny, because you're just like, why is this person so interested in Windex? Like, and it allowed me, and I feel like whenever I coach, it allows people to feel honestly funny, and it
sure.
feel like they can master this thing. And when they and they're still improvising, because they have to think of the thing, they have to find ways to talk about it. Even the person who's the trainer has to pull from their own life experience, like, mm-hmm. even if they don't know, you know, usually people will pick jobs that they've done, but, like, sometimes they'll pick jobs that they haven't done, and they'll just, like, pull from what they are thinking of, and they have to, like, interject that, and they also have to respond naturally to the person who's, like, being kind of weird while still sticking to this. So it also implements rest, because, and movement, because they have to, like, go from one place to the other.
Oh, yeah.
So there was something about just the structure of that made me feel like this isn't as hard as I'm thinking about it. Like, because I think when you first learn game, at least for me, it's very overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain, you know, there's a certain fear or even insecurity that you can have that's like, you're never going to get this. Like, this is just for people who are so much better than you.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And
oh,
you're just
yeah.
like, you're like, what? And then, like, you go and you watch people do it successfully, and you're just like, how are they
doing that?
I'll never be able to do that. And so to have just a small success, like, took some of that pressure away. And I was like, I can do this. Like, I just need to, like, it's just the structure isn't there for me, but I can put that structure in when I'm creating the scene with my partner,
mm-hmm.
when I come out, you know. I mean, and the Herald is more structured than just a montage or whatever other, like, improv form. The Herald already has some built-in structure, too, and you're getting – and you're doing an opening, especially pattern game, you're pulling premise. But, like, the openings you're pulling something from, so you guys have, like, you know – a starting place that you can hopefully both be connected to, and then just like fill out that world and decide what the weird thing is going to be, and then okay, how do we continue to proceed with this scene, and then bring back this weird thing in heightened ways, so it's more and more fun. So yeah, that was my like I get it, like that was
yeah.
kind of my like Matrix, like seeing the Matrix moment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. What was, do you remember a moment of difficulty or an obstacle?
Yeah. Honestly, for me, the thing that was the most difficult, and it's on game, on my character game, was, like, not, like, judging my partner's moves or, like, being too in my head about what the right thing to do is.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is, like, a structure, and, like, I wasn't, like, a super brainiac kid, but, like, I did well in school, and, like, you know, I feel like I have a very, like, intellectual, like, logical look at things a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have, like, and I, like, math was, I liked math more than I liked, like, English,
mm-hmm.
even though I wound up doing better than English than I did in math. But I always felt like, because in math, the thing that I liked about math was that there was a right answer, like
yes.
an undeniable, unrefutable right answer. I felt like there was a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things. And so when, like, either myself or my partner or my teammates or whatever were doing the wrong things, I would get really frustrated and be like, I don't know what to do. Like, we need to be doing the right thing, and we're not doing it, instead of just being like, everything is a tool. Like, everything can further make, like, every mistake can be gold, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was that, to me, that was the most difficult thing to kind of overcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a little pet theory that people who are drawn to improvisers are either, typically very well-behaved people
mm-hmm.
that like the freedom of being able to misbehave on stage
okay.
or like to rebel.
Yeah.
Or they grew up as rebels that like the structure of improv.
Oh, interesting.
Which one are you?
I don't exist in duality, so no.
Oh, wow. For this question, can you?
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, there's no way I can say that I was a rebel. So I guess I was well behaved and liked to do anything. I mean, definitely the reason I got into acting was because I liked to make pretend. I liked stories, and I liked the idea of like being able to transform. You know, I feel like in my social life I'm a little bit of a chameleon. Like, I think the best example of this is I'm like, I am an innately shy person, but I was also voted most talkative in middle school. So, like, some people, like, and it depends where I was in life, but, like, there are certain people in certain aspects of my life, when they find out that I'm, like, a performer or a comedian, mm-hmm. they're like, what? Don't see it at all. And then there are other people in my life who, if they found out, like, I was, like, really shy and, like soft-spoken, they'd be like, that's not you. So, and I'm a Libra, and I don't believe in astrology, but there's something about, like...
but you brought it up, so...
There's something about... Well, I do, like, I identify with the balancing of the scales, like, so, like, usually, it's kind of, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm balancing somebody else out, like a certain energy, or, mm-hmm. you know, anyway, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, that does. That does. And you know what? It's the first time I've ever tried out that question, so maybe it's bunk. But I got an interesting answer out of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. All right. We're going to wrap up. My last question for you. So you do stand up and sketch, and you act, mm-hmm. and you do improv. Where do you see improv fitting in this puzzle, like, now, but also moving forward in your life? Like, what does improv do for you, I guess?
You mean career-wise or just life?
However you want to take that.
Okay. I think for me, career-wise, I think improv, like, I think I've done everything I can to... I don't see myself being an improviser who's making money off of, like, tours and stuff. So getting to be on a house team was, like, great. You know, my ego, like, would have loved to have been on Harold, but it doesn't really matter, like, in terms of, like, me advancing in my career.
Right.
That being said, life-wise, like, I realized, especially recently, that I really love improv. I love doing it. So I don't think I would ever, like, stop doing it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm glad that Astronomy Club has a show once a month that we do. And, you know, doing indie shows here and there. Like, improv is super fun. And the best part is, like, the collaboration and the people that you meet and all that stuff. So I thankfully was able to get plugged into that community, so much so that we got 1,000 comments on a Facebook thread.
We didn't even talk about that. But you're going to have to, you know, go on Facebook.
It's my legacy. And I feel like if somebody listened to this episode, they would be like, how did you not talk about this Facebook thread?
Honestly, I was like, okay, and I'm going to get to the Facebook thread. And then I found out we were 42 minutes in. And I was like, I guess I'm not. And that was a long-form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when Jonathan Braylock will now be your host, babies. See, babies.
Oh my God.
You've been listening to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.